Welcome to Social Selling 2.0 live show and podcast, where each week we explore the future of B2B sales. Social has changed the B2B and professional services landscape forever. Capturing and keeping buyer attention has never been more challenging. Our mission is to help you discover new strategies, new technologies, new go-to-market systems, and stay up to date with what is working now in B2B sales. Your hosts are Carson Hetty, the number one social seller at Microsoft, Tom Burton, a best-selling author and B2B sales specialist, and Brandon Lee, an entrepreneur with multiple seven and eight-figure exits and a leading voice in LinkedIn social selling. Brandon and Tom also lead Social Selling 2.0 Solutions, which offers turnkey consulting, coaching, and training to B2B sales leaders. Now, let's start the show.
Welcome to episode number 70. Brandon, Carson, great to see you. And Julie, welcome.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
We have just found out before we came on board that we are surrounded, Carson, by celebrities.
I know, Tom. I feel way out of place. You know, we were talking about the, you know, just the movie and TV credits that are attached to Julie and to Brandon. So,
to Julie
and to Brandon.
So, and to Brandon, of course.
Yeah.
Now, hey, this is so at the very end of Fever Pitch, the Drew Barrymore, Jimmy Fallon film. If you look in the crowd, I am there.
Yes.
Hey, that's something. Get credit for that.
I'm going to cling to it till the day I die.
Absolutely.
And I have nothing.
So. We've been looking forward to this episode for a long time. I kept thinking in the back of my head, like, when is the Julie Hansen episode? Because I see Julie's stuff on LinkedIn regularly. And what I love about her stuff, and we'll talk about this during the episode today, is how unique it is. Julie has got a great differentiated perspective. And so she's coming from a place of being a real expert in her field, but it's she applies it to sales in a very unique way. And so I always see her stuff, and I'm like, I keep pinging Tom and Brandon. I'm like, when's the Julie episode? So here we are. We're here.
Yeah.
It's here.
And we're going to talk about something today that we have not really talked about, which is how do you really, as Julie, you phrase it, command the digital stage? And how do you really have confidence with your communications online? And I guess we all live here, right? We all live in our world of video and Zoom. So, Julie, why don't we start off? And before we do that, go ahead.
Yeah. Brandon, sorry. Well, I just want to acknowledge the people that are commenting and welcome them. And Jonathan Long, we haven't seen Jonathan for a while. And Bob and Brian, thanks for coming in. And anyone else, okay, we want these to be interactive. We want these to be about you. So any questions you have, any comments you have, throw them in there. We're going to do our best to get you up there. And Julie will be a wealth of knowledge. So bring the comments. And for everybody on the podcast, you're listening, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And if you wouldn't mind, you like what you hear, we would really appreciate the review to help us with our, you know, our reach. And of course, hey, you know, screenshot it and share it with people you think would find value from this as well. All right, Tom, I'm out of your way.
No, thank you. I was about to say the same thing. So, but not as well. So Julie, tell us a little bit about your background, and how you kind of got into this whole area, and then we'll kind of dig into some of the key topics here.
Sure. Well, as Carson mentioned, I combine sales and acting because those are my two careers and my two passions. I didn't know when I was in sales that acting was going to play such a big part in my sales career, but it really did. When I started out in sales, and I'm not going to start back in, you know, the year, because it'll be a long show if I do. But I came from a buyer's side. And so I was used to people calling me back. And so when I became a salesperson, I was like, whoa, this is a whole different world. And it really rocked my confidence. And I saw all these confident salespeople around me. And I thought, what can I do to build my confidence? And I remembered that I liked acting. And I started taking some acting classes, and it really helped me sort of find my authentic voice and be able to just face a lot of those challenges that used to, you know, make me want to hide. And it turned into a career. I worked in sales and acting at the same time, and did some professional acting in New York for a while. And when I went into training and used a lot of my acting skills in that, taught presentation skills, still do communication skills. And when I saw the pandemic strike and everyone just being told, hey, get Zoom, get on camera and go, I thought, why are we not helping these people? Like, it's a whole new medium. When I started out as a stage actor, which is how most actors start out, you know, it's a whole different skill set. And so when I first auditioned for a little role in a film, you know, I was terrible. I didn't know where to look. I didn't know what to do with my hands. I forgot my lines. And I didn't know that it was special training and there were different skills to bring to this medium. And so that really created the book that I wrote, Look Me in the Eye, and then the training that I do around that for sales teams to help people confidently, incredibly communicate on camera, because it's not natural, and there are skills and it's, you know, and some techniques that help make it easier. We're not allowing people, you know, access to those.
So did I hear you say that you were making sales calls and people were not calling you back?
Yes. Was I doing something wrong?
I've never really experienced that. Carson, have you seen that?
No, not really.
Horrifying.
No, here's what's funny. So I think Julie and I have probably been connected for about 5 years. And Julie, I'm going to give you the ultimate compliment here, because when I am living my day to day, I get to spend a lot of time with customer executives, with people in my organization, with my team. I've done a lot of high caliber video presentations. I feel like I always have you in the back of my head telling me to look them in the eye, look them in the camera. And it's been infinitely helpful. So I love that you've kind of encapsulated, if we get video right, especially in this hybrid era, you know, I'm all for, and I know you are too, like meeting people in person, and there's going to be a real value in that. But you do, you've got to command the digital, the video stage, because if you can do that, you can enhance your effectiveness in those situations. So that's, in my mind, that's the ultimate compliment to you, is that I was got you reminding me, like, hey, look them in the eye.
Well, yes, and you embrace that, and it's one of those things that, it's not the first time people hear that when I say it, but we don't do it for a variety of reasons, and partly is breaking a lifetime of, you know, habit that we've developed, and not realizing how important it is and how the other person feels when we don't do it. And so we sort of dismiss it as like, oh, they know I'm trying, and no, they don't know.
I'd love to ask our audience, and then, you know, Brandon, let's dive into some questions.
No, you're good.
Great comment from Bob. I mean, yeah, I'm a living example of that. What if you got a Facebook radio? I'd love to ask the audience, when do you find yourself prioritizing using video? When do you find yourself maybe not using video? Because I think there's a lot of times we'll show up to a meeting and we just go with the flow. We go with whatever other people are doing. It's funny. I was actually in a work chat earlier this week about, you know, talking about on our team meetings. When I'm running a team meeting, I always come out on video, whether everybody else is or not. And I find a lot of times when people come on to speak or present, they will go to video. But I think a lot of people have their default. And I've even challenged some folks, especially ones that almost default not to using video, on with customer executives. If you want somebody to spend money with you, you need to show them your face and your eyeballs.
Right. That's the reason we're on video, right? It's not enough just to show up, but it is something to see you, right? And especially in the age of, you know, all this AI floating around, just to improve that authenticity. But really, if you're not using, you know, the camera, make it a phone call. Like, if you really don't think it matters, if you think you have nothing to add by your humanness and by your personality and your energy and presence, then use the phone, right? Then you don't need to be on video. But to not turn it on because others don't have it on is just for your own comfort, and we need to admit that, right? It's nothing less.
I show my face on every call I can, and I don't have a face like Brandon Lee. So that's a leap for me.
Carson, Why do you think I have a beard? You know, when I first grew the beard out, I did it as a joke. And then when I said, "Oh, I'm going to shave," my whole family said, "No, no, don't." I didn't realize I looked so bad without a beard.
Oh my God,
hey, Julie. Yeah. You know, I think it's probably just that insecure, our own personal insecurities. But for people that don't want to turn on their camera, like how do you coach them or motivate them? And what are a couple of like the key things? Like, do we worry about too much about our lighting, our background? Or I know obviously we talked about looking people in the eyes, but what else? What are some of those just basic things to help people get more comfortable with being on camera?
I find that people are bothered by things that make no difference to their audience. The first thing I always tell people is turn your self-image off. That's the last person you want to make eye contact with when you're on camera is yourself. Because nobody looks at themselves and go, "Oh yeah, I look awesome." No, we go, "What is going on with my hair and my face? I need to smile." And we paste on some smile that has nothing to do with what's just been said. So it's understanding what matters to your audience. Your audience it's not a beauty contest, whether you're in person or whether you're virtual. Does this person appear credible, competent, confident? Do they look like they're interested in me? They're not very concerned about your hair, how your hair turned out, or
thank goodness,
you know, or if you have hair, right? Right? So it's getting people off that focus because that creates a lot of vulnerability. And no one is judging you as harshly as you judge yourself. And the other thing about it is when you don't have the good skills, when you're not sure if you're doing it right or you're lighting sufficient or you're making eye contact when you should or you're moving, you know, using your hands funny that are creating more distraction than adding context, then you're going to be you're not going to be confident. And the camera picks that up. Because we are literally in someone's face. When you're in person, you rarely look at someone's face this intensely for that long. And so those insecurities, those incongruencies will start to leak out. And so you do have to develop that inner confidence. So it's partly awareness and understanding more about your audience. How do I make my audience's, stop thinking about yourself, and how do I make my audience's experience as, you know, wonderful as possible.
So I have a kind of a follow-up question to that, Julie. So what I hear you saying is the people are not scrutinizing how you look. So what is it that they are looking for and they are scrutinizing when they have them on camera? Like, what is it that really matters versus how we actually look?
Great question. What we notice when we first meet someone, if you think about when we make a first impression, and there's studies on first impressions, you know how fast we make a first impression, by the way? Does anybody know?
Seconds.
20 minutes.
20 minutes?
That's a long impression.
Wow.
I can really bring my A game in 20 minutes.
Yeah, 20 minutes.
That explains why you like me, Tom, because I didn't give you, I gave you a lot of time and you didn't give me right away.
Right.
An hour or so, right.
Yeah. Wow. Tom's very generous, by the way. Yes. Most studies say somewhere between 7 and 10 seconds. People decide if you're trustworthy, if you're confident, if you're likable, if you're worth listening to. So the answer to that question is really a question. How do we convey those qualities right up front? Like, how do we quickly convey credibility, confidence, interest, attentiveness, likability? And those, unfortunately, are also the hardest qualities to communicate on camera if we try to do it just the same way we did in person, which is one of the biggest mistakes that I see people making, is just assuming, well, I'm just sliding over here from being in person into this new medium. I'm just going to do the same thing and expect it to work, which is, you know, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. It's not going to have the same impact for a variety of reasons. Whether it's how the camera distorts things or reads things or how our behavior changes when we're in front of a camera or doesn't change when it should change.
I think that is very, very insightful. I mean, what I heard you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that just going on camera and being the way that we are in real life doesn't translate. So we need to rethink the way that we are on camera.
Yes. And, you know, the old rule that, you know, showing up is 80% or it's not true anymore. That was true in the beginning. We were all so excited to have a way to get together and connect and see each other. But, you know, everybody got kind of stuck there, right? It's like, it said, oh, that's good enough. It's not good enough. I mean, there are people that are really excelling in this and learning how to not just show up, but to make other people feel seen and heard while they're talking to them in a virtual meeting, which is a huge leap to actually make them feel, you know, the emotion, the energy of the conversation. And those are where we can go if we actually look at this as a new medium and adapt to it the way that it works.
Yeah, Julie, I want to piggyback on that because I agree. I think, you know, a lot of times there's the, anytime that somebody has a compulsion not to go on video, it's probably because you do have to turn on different engines of yourself to maintain focus. And you can't multitask because customers will see that. They will know that they don't have your undivided attention. And so there's that added pressure. If you're not on video, you can maybe get away with something. But believe me, the second somebody asks you a question, if you're multitasking, they'll catch you anyway. I often, you know, I even call out sometimes, like, especially I'll do a lot of interviews, right? I interview candidates. And I'll even tell people, or if I'm meeting someone for the first time, you know, customer executive, I might even call out, you know, hey, I'm taking notes. So I don't want to give you the impression that I'm not paying attention. So, you know, there's almost an etiquette as well to the video element. Wow, it's been 4 years since the start of the pandemic. I'd love to hear your thoughts, Julie, on what have been your biggest learnings over that time span around how to really stick the landing when it comes to leveraging video?
Well, I think one of my biggest learnings has been that a lot of people are okay with the status quo, and they assume they're coming across like they intend to. And so it took me a while to finally develop an assessment that really helps people see, like, this is how your first impression is. This is how other people see you. This is how credible you come across. This is how engaging you are. And it's an eye opener. And I find that until people realize that, they think they live in this fantasy world that, well, I assume everything's okay. I always ask people, do you believe, and I'll throw this out to you guys, do you believe that you are perceived as the same engaging, authentic, interesting, confident person on video as you are in person?
That's a great question.
What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think
I hope so, right?
But, you know, you think about it, and there's a comfort in that medium of being in person and live. And I found it that over the last few years, especially transitioning to doing as much virtual as we do, it doesn't become as familiar a muscle to be in person. And what I mean by that is, like, I've spent the better part of the last 4 years really trying to master this medium and improve upon tactics and etiquette. But when you go back to an in-person setting, as much as I've always loved that, it's a completely different muscle. You're doing different things.
Right.
You're engaging, you know, you might be sharing a meal. And so there's whole other elements to it. This is very much its own unique medium.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, and it's interesting you say that, because I think that there's truth to that. When you don't use it enough, you start to, you know, lose it. And even though, you know, you feel like, oh gosh, I've done, you know, how many virtual meetings do you think you've had over the past 4 years? Oh, you know, couple thousand, 10,000. And so you start to feel like, well, you know, I know how to show up. I know how to do this. But if you think about it, that pales in comparison to the number of in-person meetings, interactions, connections that you've had, where you have gotten tons of feedback over a lifetime, whether it's solicited or unsolicited. You've had classes, you've had just exchanges with people where you go, oh, that didn't land very well. I better not do that again. And we have just very little, if any of it, virtually. So we're just kind of going along, hoping everything's coming across okay, but not really having any idea. And that is a dangerous place to not understand how your audience perceives you on their screen. And if you don't know that, then what are you going to fix?
Well, yeah. And I want to comment on that. And then, yeah, Tom, would love to go to you. I think the challenge is when you're in video, because sometimes those interactions aren't as impactful as an in-person relationship and an in-person transaction. I find, let's use a football analogy. You can get the ball down the field very considerably in a lot of face-to-face in-person interactions, and sometimes virtually you don't advance the ball quite as much. So I think in video, it almost feels like you, to really be impactful, you've got to up the ante. You've got to really make sure you're almost over-engaged in those settings as opposed to in person where it's a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, if you're looking to differentiate, you have to go beyond the words that you say. And I think most people, and in sales, I grew up this way in sales too, think it's all about what you say and very little about the exchange and the connection. And I think we're seeing more of that. But if it was just about the words, you know, we could all send each other great emails, right? Obviously, there's a human quality that drives that forward. And if you are just relying on the words, you're no different. You're not setting yourself apart from the competitors. In fact, if you have a competitor that's doing more than relying on the words, you're at a real disadvantage. And so understanding how do we make them actually feel something? How do we motivate people in this rather artificial environment and make them feel something as opposed to just know something?
And I've never met any of the three of you in person, but I do feel like because we've been on video together that I can be myself with you, which I think says something, because if we had never seen each other via video, that wouldn't be the case.
Good. You know, I'm going back to your question, Julie, you asked about, do you feel more comfortable in person or different on video than in person? And I've been thinking about that as we've been going through here. Personally, I feel way more comfortable in person, but I'm realizing why is I'm not watching myself in person. I'm watching you, but here on video, I'm watching myself. So not only am I sort of scrutinizing myself, but I'm also talking to you, which I think is a skill that you have to develop, to your point, right? You have to get used to it and build that out.
Absolutely.
The second question, maybe it's a question or maybe it's just I've got to justify my actions a bit, is I know I get in meetings, especially if I'm, so I understand if like you're having a one-on-one or something like that, the importance of that really being present. But I'll get in meetings sometimes, there'll be 10 people on there and I'm not really the center of what's going on. And so I want to multitask. I want to get other things done while that's going on. And it's obvious if you're multitasking, you turn off your video. Do you feel like that is also sort of a peacock, or something that is a mistake that you should make when you're in a meeting with a larger number of people?
Look, if you're on video and you think you're invisible at any given time, you're living in a fantasy, right? So it, and I feel like if you know, think about it as a presenter. Even if, you know, go back to your in-person presentation days, like Carson, and you'd have some members of your team there. And if you looked around and they were like taking notes, and maybe you've seen this, they're on their phone, and your customers see that too, would you think that's good behavior? No, you would have a talking to them and say, hey, you need to at least look like you're interested if I'm talking, right? People are forming an opinion. And just because it's easier for us to tune out and we have stuff to do, and we wouldn't do that in person. And well, some people obviously have done that in person. But, you know, we try to justify it to ourselves because it's uncomfortable. It's extra work. And yes and yes. But ultimately, whose comfort is more important, yours or the audience?
This episode just has me thinking in so many different directions because it's as we pointed out at the beginning, I mean, it's very different than a lot of the episodes that we do. Like, for instance, one, Tom, I appreciate your candor in stating that, you know, sometimes you find yourself looking at yourself. And I'll tell you, like, I've done some presentations to executives that if I had done them in person, I probably would have been very, very intimidated. But because I was honestly able to look at myself and tune out everybody that I was presenting to, and it was almost like I was looking in the mirror, it helped me. So it's knowing that medium sometimes and how you can leverage it to your advantage is super helpful. But I'd also like to flip that. And Julie, one of the things that challenges me sometimes, especially as a leader, is when I'm presenting to a bunch of empty spaces, people that aren't on video, you know, you think you're just casting your vision out to nobody. How do you entice people to use video more, especially internally?
Right. Well, you know, sometimes you don't have a choice. Like if you're the salesperson and the client doesn't have their video on, you know, you can try and make it inviting, but you don't have control over that. Certainly you might have some authority to do it if it's your team. But in really, I think we don't really give enough credit to how difficult it is to talk to a camera when you can't see anyone else. And that is as close to acting as most people will get without any of the training or skills that build confidence in that area. So when I work with people, a lot of times it is like working with, okay, how do we talk to people who aren't, that we can't see? And this goes for video outreach as well. That's what a lot of those videos are just so wooden because salespeople don't have any, they don't have the skills to connect with someone they can't see. And it's understandable. Why would you, right? This is entirely new. And what I always try to remind people of is, you know, it's skills, but it's also an understanding that just because I can't see you doesn't mean that you're not having a reaction, that you're not having sort of a dialogue with me. It's still a dialogue. It's just oftentimes your part is silent. And what salespeople think, or most people think, when they've got an audience they can't see and there's no input, you know, it breaks that communication loop that we're familiar with, where we say something, we get a response, we interpret that, we got nothing to interpret, we got nothing to work with. So we just keep going, we just keep talking. Instead of understanding that if I say something funny, even though I don't see you laughing, I might think, you know, you're probably smiling. And it gives me the right cadence and conversational tone to keep going and not feel like I'm talking in a vacuum. And also to pause and not race through everything and not give people an opportunity to jump in, which is half the problem on video.
I don't know anything what that's like today. Julie, I have a practical question. When my co-hosts are so excited and asking a bunch of questions and I'm just sitting there, should I smile or do I stand serious? Like, how do I, and I joke and it's totally fine. I'm okay. But I do have that question. Like, and I was thinking about it when Carson was asking good questions, Tom was asking good questions, and seriously, I joke around, I'm totally fine. How do you, like, I wonder, I was sitting there going, okay, so I'm not as involved in the show. That's okay. What do I do? Do I smile? Do I nod? How do I stay attentive? I mean, I know I'm not going to do this, but how do I stay attentive and good nonverbals when I'm you know, part of it, but I'm not as involved? And there's a couple of good comments in there I'd like to get to as well.
Okay. That's a great question. And this brings up the whole point of active listening, which is one of the things that is missing most in our virtual communications for a variety of reasons. And a lot of that is just the nature of, you know, the two-way communication. So if I say little things like, those little listening noises that you used to be able to pick up in person, the other person's talking, they can't hear that, right? And also this common problem, this presence that we bring on video, which is low energy. The first thing that goes with low energy is your facial expression, and you're seated in your comfy chair, and you have what I call resting business face. And it doesn't give off an ounce of emotion. I don't know if you're happy, you're sad, the dog died. I don't know. And it's problematic, not just in listening, you know, when you're listening, but also, you know, when you're presenting. Because if you don't think about your face, which we never used to have to in person, sometimes we just get really into this, you know, resting face that we're in, and we forget to let our face know when something is good or bad. I always say, watch your video, turn off the sound, and I should be able to tell from your face if it's good news or bad news at the most basic level. There's a lot of things in between there that can happen. But honestly, this is our 20%. This is, you know, the 15-20% that people can see of us. If you're not using your face to help communicate, and I don't mean miming for the camera, but finding those authentic expressions and emotion, you know, you're making it harder than it needs to be. But Brandon, to your point, it has to be authentic. And what happens is, just like you said, like, how should I look? Well, if you're really listening, do you have to think about that? No, if you're listening and you find something interesting, what do you do when you're interested? You know, but sometimes we have to warm up those expressive muscles so we have more access to them because we forget to use them on video.
So the resting business face resonated with me, except I heard it as a different expression. I think it was a D word in the middle. And my kids actually told me that when I'm thinking, they used to think that I was angry at stuff. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times in meetings or someone's listening, I'm very attentively listening and I'm processing. And I got to realize, and it wasn't until I was more on Zoom that I realized, oh yeah, you don't look good right there. You should probably stop.
And that's true. And that's part of that awareness. We have to know, you know, how maybe some of our expressions are, you know, they come across differently than we intend. It's like we are judging ourselves by our intentions, and our audience is judging us by our actions and how it makes them feel. So there's often a disconnect there.
I do want to ask a quick question kind of on that vein. Like, I do like the fact that they've added the, you know, like the emoticons where you can love or like, or you can clap in the midst of a video meeting or call. What are your thoughts on avatars?
There's a lot of AI going around. I don't know that we need to,
but
to add more to it.
Like, I feel like we're going to get to this point where people, is it better to use an avatar
as
a salesperson than nothing at all? I mean, definitely not than video, but I don't know. Some of these things, they confuse me. I don't know where we're going with all this. Like, I love the fact that we can, you know, show a clap without clapping, and that I can show that I'm thumbs up, like, hey, I agree with this, without having to jump in and speak. But I don't know. I'm scratching my head around like the use of avatars and things of that stature.
I think, you know, my goal on camera is to make it feel like we're sitting across from each other having a cup of coffee. So trying to recreate as much of that in-person experience. And it's not a normal in-person experience to sit across from a cartoon figure, you know, and maybe that's not the impression you want to convey. We have to think about who our audience is and what does that say to them? Let's say I couldn't bother to show up in person, or I'm not that serious. I'm not taking this as seriously as I might.
Yeah. I envision a world someday where AI will give us the ability to like mirror ourselves, but like, you know, Tom, you could add hair, right, to the video. Tom, you're muted.
That's part of my presence, is to be muted. That's what what people say, is I'm much better off when I'm muted, I've been told. So, hey, let's hit a couple of these questions, because there's some really good stuff coming in here. And I'm going to hit Anthony's here first. It's a little bit of a long one. He says, I'm curious, 99% of my time is my camera's on. Walk the walk for the role I'm in. Depending upon the closeness of the relationship, though, especially new ones, as we're talking about, picking up on cues of their comfort, and if I sense there might be some weirdness, usually I'll ask if it'd be better to turn it off or what they prefer. I think what he's asking here is, if somebody else is uncomfortable, right? If you're in a meeting and the other person is uncomfortable, is it good etiquette to kind of go, hey, would you be less, you know, be more comfortable if we just did verbal here?
I think that's a question. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I would say, how do you know they're uncomfortable? And why would you think it's because you're on video? I think we have not learned enough about reading virtual body language to be great judges of that. So I would just be hesitant to assign that meaning to some behavior that might mean there's something else going on they're comfortable about that has nothing to do with you. And that's often true of when we look out in an audience and, you know, or get a glimpse of our audience and they look like, you know, they look bored. And instantly we go, oh my God, they hate me and this is terrible. And then we start to speed up and just do all the things to make it even worse. When in fact, that's a very common on-screen behavior for audiences because it's relatively new that this is a dynamic two-way conversation. And we're used to sitting in front of any kind of screen, you know, just ready for popcorn and, and a show. So it's hard. It's often dangerous to misinterpret that behavior, I think.
Okay. Yeah. And I want to, before Brandon, I know you want to jump in with a question here, but it was actually Brian's question that then, so I wanted to make sure Brian, because that's, I think, a really good question.
Yeah, that was the one I wanted.
Yeah. Because I think you see that all the time, right? People like, you know, do you feel like you're better off? We just did this without it or whatever. So I think that's a great point. Brandon, go ahead and jump in with your.
I think that question too, though, is Julie, what do you recommend? If you get on a Zoom or a Teams and they don't turn their camera on, what should we do?
I give them an easy, just hang up. Hey, if you're open to it, I'd love to, you know, to see you in face to face and just say hello, like it's just for a minute or something. And a lot of times people turn it on, they'll just leave it on and then just let it go. But otherwise, I just go forward as if we're having a conversation because we are. I just can't see you. And that's my problem, not yours. And you get every advantage of being able to see me and, you know, that connection that's going to start to build is going to happen for you. It's going to be harder for me. I don't deny that, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is that you feel connected.
Yeah. A lot of really good stuff being dropped here. And I think, you know, one thing that this really resonated for me is that it depends on the situation. It also sometimes will depend on the level of relationship that I'm trying to build. If by default, you know, it's like a monthly cadence that this customer has with my team and I'm just popping in, I may not hop onto video because I also don't want to distract. I don't want to be the only one that's on video. I want my team to be able to do their thing. But if I'm meeting a senior leader for the first time, I'll lead with video. On the same token, sometimes there will be situations where, Julie, you made a really astute observation earlier where sometimes we may be distracted by the body language that we're picking up from somebody that we're talking to. Which is all the more reason why sometimes I try to look at that light. I'll see their face. I know they're there. But instead of getting caught up on looking at their face while I'm talking, I may just look at the light so that I don't get distracted by anything and I can still speak freely. And then when they're speaking, I'll look directly to them.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's easy to get distracted by those signals. And I would say that when someone is talking, if you think about when you're in person, how do you feel like someone's listening to you when you're talking? This behavior, does that make you feel heard?
Never.
Probably not. And so we do that a lot on camera. And I know this is one of the most counterintuitive skills and it takes practice and some technique to do it. But is, you know, to make someone really feel heard on camera, making eye contact is one of the most powerful things you can do. And we think that we're going to learn something from people's body language. And first of all, like I said, you can see some of their body language if you have their, if you're one-on-one and you have them full screen. With your peripheral vision, you can catch a lot of things. You can catch major changes in expression, body language. But the odds of catching someone's, you know, body language, you know, in a little square of a bunch of people at the right time to learn anything from that is pretty low. And so that listening behavior is really important. I just wanted to point out.
And I also want to say briefly, and then Brandon, on to you. But what's fascinating to me, so there are also times where you can really use video to your advantage. I was in a very tough deal negotiation a few years ago, and I was the only one on camera. And I was getting the business from some people in procurement that were, you know, not too thrilled with me. And they were not on video, but I maintained video, maintained composure, maintained eye contact at the camera the entire time, and was able to, you know, keep my cool. And I think that there is a strength in being able to leverage the video medium as it is in situations like that. I mean, definitely, it wasn't, you know, to intimidate or anything. I'm here. I'm being my genuine, authentic self. I understand your feedback. I understand where you're coming from. This is my vantage point. This is where we are. This is where I feel like we're going. This is why I need what I'm asking for. And so I felt like that made a difference in that negotiation.
I'm sure it did. It, you know, eye contact, it, virtually or in person, conveys confidence, credibility, listening, interest. It's such a powerful tool. And one of the beauties of the camera that we don't necessarily have when we're in person is that just by looking at it, I can have a group of 100 people on here and everybody feels like I'm talking just to them. And if you know how to leverage that, that is a huge advantage. And most people are busy going, trying to cover all the little squares and make sure they're talking to everybody, which makes no one feel like you're talking to them, right? So it's something that, you know, you can't really do in person either. You're kind of always talking to one part of the room and try to balance that out. But, you know, there are good things about the camera too.
Well, I think that ties into Bob's comment here about not liking the Brady Bunch screen, right? Is that when in person, you're usually directing your comments to somebody specific, but in Zoom, sometimes you're not. It's more, and again, I think that comes back to a skill that you have to start to develop along the way.
Right. And it's a skill. It's in acting, you learn that when you are talking to a camera, you never talk to a group of people when you're on camera because it is a personal medium. Everyone is having their own personal experience with you. So if I think of talking to a group, I tend to be more formal, a little more presentational, a little vaguer with my eye contact and my intention. Whereas if I think I'm just talking to you, I'm very specific. I know who I'm talking to. I have you in mind and we're having a conversation and it's very tailored and personal.
Brandon, I think that's why you really stuck out in that lunchroom scene in Back to the Future, because you were just like really good eye contact and we couldn't miss you. So anyway.
Nice. Julie, I have two questions for you. One is, like in acting, or, you know, you hear you got to go 30 to 50% more expressive for the camera to catch it. Is it the same when we're on Zoom? And then the second part, and then I'll let you talk, is what are your thoughts on these type of cameras? I thought they were good in theory, but okay. I'll explain my experience with it. But what are your sure. thoughts on that for people?
Sure. So energy is a huge problem. And that's the reason people are not very expressive on cameras, that energy depletes that. But you're right. You have to bring more energy, not the same kind of stage energy, because that's always a little elevated. But what happens on camera, most people don't realize is, you know, it takes away a big chunk of that energy. Like you said, about half your energy. And so you have to bring more. And most people are just showing up at their regular level of energy. So your regular level of energy, take away half of that, that's a really low energy place. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do something to boost that energy, then it's going to be a very dull experience for everybody. And I heard the worst advice recently, and I've heard this before from in-person presentation skills, but you know, you should match the audience's energy. It's like, oh my gosh, if you do that in a virtual meeting, it's going to be just duller than dirt, right? You have to bring enough energy for you and the other side of the screen, because you're not going to get it from the other people. You're not going to be able to rely on that to bring your energy out. So, and your other question was about that. Is that the center cam?
Yeah, the one I got is called Eye to Eye. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. You know, those are fine if they help you with the camera placement, but you've got to put it somewhere on your screen. And that's not typically the problem that with people is if you make it a more favorable place, great. It's going to block part of somebody's face. Mm-hmm. It's going to not cover everybody else in the other square. The real trick is, how do I look at one spot for an entire hour or however long I'm on a presentation for as much of that as possible and make it feel personal and connect with you? So those can help. Especially if you've got a giant screen and you've got your camera on the top of it, that's going to be a really bad angle. So those can help with that.
Brandon, do you not like it, or what was your?
No, you know, it brings in a lot of light and it focuses it very centrally. So it like washes out my face and it's really focused. So it's not great on the other side.
Right. Some of those, like the plexicam, where it's just you get to drop your camera down in front and position it, but you've still got that camera there right in front of somebody else's face. So if you're hoping it will, make it easier to make eye contact with them, you're still not going to be able to see them as well.
Yeah, I think the thing that you said that really resonates most with me, and I forget, is bringing that extra energy to the table. And I think Bob was saying just eyebrows up in one of his comments and that is a really good start. Mm-hmm. Just eyebrows up. But yeah, sometimes it's, we get in that thoughtful, contemplative, we're listening, and we forget that we're also then portraying really, really low energy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I officially have to admit this is the most uncomfortable episode we've ever had, for me anyway, just in seeing all the things that I need to improve on related to this. Julie, if you were to give, as we kind of wind down here, for somebody to, what would be three things that you would recommend for somebody to do to really start kind of drilling and working on this, on how do you improve this? So, like anything, right? You don't get better practice, and you don't work to get good at it. What should we be practicing, and what should we be doing, and how do we tell that we are improving? Like, what are some things that help us understand what we're improving?
Right. Well, so a couple things you can do is, the goal of making more eye contact is like, oh yeah, I need to look at the camera more. Well, we need to break that down. What does it really matter? So if you start by just looking at the camera during those times where it really makes a difference, which is, for example, when I'm making a key point, I want to say, this is going to save you, 25 hours a week, as opposed to, this is going to save you 25 hours a week, right? It's going to have more impact.
Okay.
If I say it if I look at the camera when you are talking, it's going to make you feel heard and understood. If I look at the camera when I ask a question, you're going to get a better answer. You're going to be more likely to get an answer, because if I look down here when I ask a question, so what's your goal to improve in video this year? And everybody's like, is she talking to me, right? Or as opposed to if I ask it to the camera and I just hold it there. So being very specific, and then you start to build on that. So those are some good places to start, specifically with eye contact. The rest, it's important to know just how you're coming across currently, just building that awareness. Watch yourself on video. But to Tom's point earlier about people being comfortable and critiquing themselves so harshly, it's very hard to be objective and do that. So I use a very specific self-evaluation form that keeps you focused on, we don't care about your hair, we don't care about the funny thing you do with your eyebrows. Did I look at the camera this amount of time? Did I ask a question to the camera? Were my gestures mostly in frame, and did they add context, or were they fast and distracting? So those are the things I would start. And lastly, always warm up. To get to that good energy place, you got to warm up. You got to bring it, whatever that is for you, and includes warming up your face and doing some expressive exercises.
And as you talk about this, I don't know about you, but I'll sometimes go through a day where I literally have back-to-back Zoom meetings, like literally no time between them. But I think, and I've been trying to set them up now where I do like 45 or 50 minute meetings. So I have 10 minutes between one to the other. Yep. But what you're saying is, it's not just, hey, so you can go to the bathroom and take a break. It actually allows you to kind of, okay, take a step back, recharge, and know what you're going into for the first one. So they all just don't blend together.
Right, right.
I mean, I think for me, that's something that all of this kind of fits into.
Tom, you should be talking to yourself in the mirror when you got to go to the bathroom so you can get yourself amped up for the next video.
Yeah, I do that. I walk down the hall talking to myself.
That's a trick.
Yeah. Too much information.
One of my big takeaways here today is, you know, look, as salespeople, sales professionals, sales leaders, we need all the tools that we can possibly get our hands on to positively impact and influence the relationships that we're trying to create. And there's a lot of great ways to use video. Like, and Julie, I'd be interested in like your thoughts on the transition of video over time. I mean, obviously video was available before the pandemic. It became very prominent, and then there became a lot of additional tools that we could leverage that were part of video. You know, we talked briefly about avatars and all these other changes. I'd be interested in the changes that you have seen that you have been really fond of, like other ways that we can really maximize the video experience. And I'll give you an example. Like one of the things that I really love to see is in trying to keep with that eye contact and high energy and obviously not wanting to come across like I am reading a script. I mean, I can position my keynotes right there on my screen so that I am in essence touching on or reflecting on those notes while I'm looking right at you, which, you know, knowing your medium, it's and it goes back to you being an artist, being in acting. You're always kind of understanding and knowing your medium. And we're all kind of, in essence, sometimes putting on a show or putting on a performance. You know, we're acting in the role of great sales professional, and our presentation is the performance. And so, you know, I would love to get your thoughts on like what has been really helpful that's come along that's helped you to optimize your video experience. And when you're coaching others, maybe you bring their attention to that.
Well, I think your point about notes is a big area because that encompasses like presentations and demos. And so I work with a lot of teams who say, well, I'm never going to be able to make eye contact because I'm demoing or I'm showing slides. And the fact is that shouldn't keep you from making enough eye contact. Yes, it's going to be less, but there are times where you want to talk directly to the camera. There's a technique that you learn as an actor, how to work with a script and still and do a live reading with the rest of the cast when you're not quite off book, right? So you get a line, and then instead of like reading it to the screen, like this is really going to save you $10,000. I get it, and then I bring it over here and I say, so this is what's really going to save you, you know, $10,000. Month as you go through this program. And so those kind of techniques are really helpful. And there's just a lot of them that are more skills-based. I think we are quick to grab any tool that we think is going to do it for us. And especially in terms of outreach and, you know, well, I got to get the right cadence and I got to get this, you know, what's the best subject line. And those are all great, but I'll tell you what, if you don't grab my attention in the first, you know, 7 seconds of that video, I'm not watching it and neither is, you know, your prospect. So it's understanding, you know, how do I engage people very quickly without tools, right? With that human connection and the piece that plays.
Yeah. I mean, look, your video experience that you deliver to a customer as an example is not going to be the end all be all. Just like on all the episodes that we talk about, your LinkedIn connection request or your comment isn't going to be the end all be all, but it's a tool that's there at your disposal that can help you create a genuine, authentic relationship with someone. And if you don't leverage it the right way, then you're missing out.
You're not only missing out, you're wasting a lot of time. And that's what I see happening is just by putting things out, because like you talked earlier about people like, I just got to put out more LinkedIn. I got to, you know, post more. You know, people are quick to get rid of things that don't meet their needs or meet a certain bar of their expectations. And so that is no longer appropriate. So yes, we need to gain some efficiencies in this area. And part of the inefficiency with video is when you're uncomfortable and when you don't know what you're doing and you don't know what to do better or how to do it. And that's going to make it less efficient for you. And so being better at this means, you know, means more efficiency, more productivity, and more videos that get watched and acted upon.
So, Julie, before we wrap up, what exercises do the three of us need to do before we go live next week?
Oh, my gosh. Okay. So here's...
We don't have warm up our face and warm up our
bodies. We don't have 2 hours left in the show, yes. Brandon, for all of that, I don't think.
I have the perfect exercise for everybody. Okay. So this is called the over-the-top exercise. And what it is you take any type of content. It could be a presentation. It can be a story. It can be, you know, something you read to your kids. And you just deliver it like, you know, your best Al Pacino, or, you know, think of your most over the top actor and like, this is going to be blah, blah, blah. And you move and you express and you emphasize different words and you just have fun with it. And when I do this exercise with people, it's so interesting because a lot of times what they give me when I say go over the top is just a really nicely elevated presentation because people don't have a good sense of what their best energy is. But we need to go over the top so we know kind of what that bar is. And then if you do it again and you don't try to push it, you're going to be nicely elevated. Your expressive muscles are going to be ready to go. And you're just going to be way more dynamic and have that screen presence to carry into the next conversation.
Tom lives over
try it.
Like, what the heck? I don't know if Tom can get any higher.
I don't know. This is going to be some serious work I'm going to have to do.
I know. I think you should have fun with it. Just go over the top.
I think right now we are going to wrap this thing up. This has been an amazing episode. And Julie, you have been awesome. Is that better?
Tom, that was incredible. That was so awesome.
We need to bring that energy every single episode.
Yes.
Oh, I thought I was bringing the energy.
Wait a minute.
Who is this guy, Carson?
Seriously.
That's awesome. Did that feel super over the top, Tom?
I need to go have a drink. That's what
I think of over the top, I think of that old Sylvester Stallone arm wrestling movie.
Oh, come on. Yeah, we could do impersonations and everything. All right,
yeah,
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready. I am ready.
Really? I would say the bottom line is if you're in a virtual conversation, a presentation, a demo, whatever, and if you're not having fun with it, then no one else is either, right? So bringing that energy that brings out your, you know, we want to see your personality. That's part of that screen presence that connects people with you.
Yeah, and it's what you asked earlier about being in person. It would be much easier for me to be that way for me in person. There, I feel like I'm overdoing it, but it probably is balanced if you were in person versus on. You have to overemphasize the piece.
I want to hear what you think about it, Tom, when you go back and watch the video and watch yourself on it. Because that was really good. Seriously, I'm like, who is this guy?
Tom studies. After these episodes, Tom studies at night. He sends us notes like, Brandon, I need you to do this. And Carson, I need you to do that. So when he studies tonight, he's like sending us notes at 3 a.m. I want to know how you feel about rewatching yourself going over the top, Tom.
All right. That's fair enough. That's fair. That's very
good. Assignment. Awesome.
I would watch that all week.
Okay. All right. Well, we've learned something. Julie, how can people find out? Now I'm a machine now. Julie, how can they find out more about you? Like, where do they learn more about all of this? And
keep them in
how
frame.
How do we learn more?
Keep them in frame, Tom. Come on. There you go.
I got to be careful what happened with the fingers. You never know.
Right, don't get too close to the camera, right? You can find me at juliehanson.live or on LinkedIn and do video outreach training, virtual meeting presentations, and virtual executive presence.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to check that out. Carson, Brandon, any final thoughts before we wrap up here? This has been very enlightening.
Amazing.
I'm just glad Carson got the movie reference in before we were done.
Yeah.
You know, we try to get one in every show. And this,
good
this
job.
One is no different. But it's hard after 70 episodes, you know, to keep them fresh. So glad that somebody said over the top so we could invoke an old 80s Stallone movie.
You know, I guarantee you
that was the only reference to Over the Top, the Stallone movie, on a podcast this week.
As it
probably,
should be.
Yeah, right.
I was thinking you were going to pull in a little bit of like the Truman Show where he didn't know he was on camera. Everyone else did.
I actually did think of that. And then I couldn't remember if we had referenced that at some point. So I didn't. I held back.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody for all the comments. The comments were great. Some really great feedback today. Again, thanks again, Julie. And next week, I believe we have Patrick Tenney. We're going to talk about negotiation. So
love Pat Tenney.
The other side of the equation. All right. Thanks again.
All right. Everybody. Thanks, everybody.
Carson. Julie, always a pleasure. And thanks for joining today. And until next time, happy modern selling.
Thanks, everyone. Hey, Tom Burton here, and I wanted to personally thank you for listening or watching today's episode of Social Selling 2.0. If you enjoyed or found value in today's show, please share with your friends and colleagues. Also, we'd really appreciate it if you could leave a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast outlet. And please also subscribe to our YouTube channel and join our free online community at socialselling20.com. There you'll get free access to the latest social selling resources, training sessions, webinars, and can collaborate with other social selling professionals. Thank you again for listening, and I look forward to seeing you in our next episode.